Tina Dunbar, and I'd like to welcome you to our inaugural episode of a new podcast that dives into the lives of teachers and education support staff professionals working in your neighborhood and rural public schools. It's called Educating from the Heart. It's produced by the Florida Education Association. I'm your host, and with me is my co-host, Luke Flint. Hi, Luke.
Hey, Tina. I'm very excited to be here with you. And most importantly, to be able to hear directly from the folk who work with Florida students every day as they talk about the realities of their life as educators. We hope our conversations will help people connect with school employees in their community to gain a greater understanding of the many unique challenges that they face.
And wouldn't you agree? The title, Educating from the Heart, really speaks to the caring and nurturing character of all teachers and support staff professionals. It really doesn't matter whether it's the bus driver, the media specialist, the folks in the cafeteria, the janitor down the hall, or your child's classroom teacher. Everyone deeply cares about the success of every student.
Each month, we'll spotlight educators to recognize their hard work and unwavering commitment to students and their passion for teaching in public schools. We have some great people lined up for this series, and we'll go beyond educators. You'll hear from students, parents, and others in the community. Tina, tell us a little bit about the first episode.
Well, sure, Luke. This year has been tough for all of us, but for educators, it's been extremely difficult. The pandemic has left a profound impact on public schools and all the people who work within them. There have been tens of thousands of positive cases infecting students and staff. Schools have opened and closed. The recent jump in the state's positivity rate has added to concerns over the possibility of the state forcing a full return of all staff and students to all school campuses in January.
Yeah, you know, Commissioner Corcoran did say at the November State Board of Education meeting that the DOE would allow for remote learning in the spring. But there are still a lot of questions, like, will districts continue to receive full funding for students, or will the DOE incentivize districts to get as many students back for instruction as possible?
Yeah, and what does that mean for educators, especially for those with medical conditions that have been allowed to work from home?
And as students return and classrooms and hallways begin to overflow, how will teachers and support staff be able to protect themselves?
We have several guests joining our discussion. You'll hear from a bus driver in Alachua County who's tackling the virus on her own. And first, we'll head to Broward County, where the district is ordering the majority of its educators to return, even though less than 20% of their students have returned to their campus classroom.
We caught up with Anna Fusco, president of the Broward Teachers Union, at a school board meeting. She represents over 18,000 educators, both teachers and education support professionals. All are concerned about the virus. Schools in Broward County remained in fully virtual instruction through early October.
You can hear me now. Woo! I had to walk. Look, behind me is our school board building that is the tallest building in Fort Lauderdale, and I can't get reception in there.
Yes, Anna, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Anna, this is Luke. What's the big issue in Broward?
The big issue today is that we got our two new school board members that we helped get elected, get inducted, and they voted for chair and vice chair, and the mean girls voted 5-4 on one of our picks, but that's okay. 2022 is going to be a new ballgame. I go to every board meeting. I try to talk to every board member when they get a call back to me. I'm in every meeting. I have all of every committee we have BTU members on. We're involved in everything. It's just getting them to listen has been the biggest task since this COVID.
I'm sure.
Working through this pandemic is difficult, especially with the state's opening everything approach to mitigating the spread. It has created a lot of anxiety and fear for everyone, and it certainly must fuel a contentious relationship between the union and the district.
Well, Anna, I caught a school board workshop online. You should hear this, Luke.
And to make sure the HR chief, instead of recklessly working to keep people to have their accommodations denied.
Okay.
To actually have people read it, because that's important that we don't have positive cases come in. And I'm going to keep saying it. Why do you not like to hear what's going on?
Can we stop the time?
You want to hide behind stuff?
So, Ms. Fusco, what I'm going to tell you is
they want business as usual, and it's our numbers have gone to 700 cases in our school system. And we've had one teacher die, one custodian die. That's all I know of. I'm sure there's been more. They're just not letting us know.
I really don't understand how anyone could feel safe and secure when questions are not being answered. I understand HIPAA information, you know, a person's private medical information is protected by law, but I would have questions also, especially with the district reversing its original decision to allow the medical accommodation.
You know, Tina, it really sounds as if COVID updates might have been withheld or slow when they were delivered. And that's nothing new. In fact, it's the lack of accurate information that really has heightened educator concerns over Commissioner Corcoran's desire for all staff and all students to come back.
Oh, it ignites me. It makes me very upset. So it's bothersome. I have to tell you, it's really bothersome. So I try to be diplomatic, but it doesn't always work out that way. You know, when I get a call from a teacher, that's why I got held up this morning. She said, Anna, we know that kids are in our school. They tested positive. They're not telling any of us. So I get there and we're working it out. I wind up having to quarantine 7 teachers. And let's put it this way, only 22 students physically are in the building. So that tells you how many people needed to know and how many needed to be quarantined with the proper contact tracing. And the admin want to be, you know, we don't want to cause hysteria. We don't want to make people, you know, worry, but it's not that. It's people have a right to know. They should have a choice to come back to work or go get tested, or if they really had close contact, to be quarantined. It's not fair to everyone else. And how about the parents? Don't they have a right to know that the child in their class tested positive and their child was next to them?
Okay, Anna, I'd like to pause for a moment and introduce one of your members, Crystal Atlas. She's a teacher, a parent, and a caregiver. Crystal has been teaching online from home after receiving a special medical accommodation from the district that the union negotiated, especially for educators with illnesses or for those living with family members with serious medical conditions. Recently, she received a notice from the district telling her to report back to school immediately. Crystal is one of several thousand school employees whose medical accommodations have been denied, even though 80% of Broward students have not returned to their campus classrooms. Hello, Crystal. I'm here with Luke. Help our listeners understand your situation.
We applied because my mother-in-law lives with us and we take care of her, and she has severe oxygen-dependent COPD. So according to the CDC, she is a tier 1 at risk for COVID. So she is in the highest level. We found out that we were denied as a part of a blanket denial. The school district basically said, you know, we accommodated as many people as we can, and we're not going to be able to accommodate anyone for their family member now. So nobody with a family member, they're teachers that have kids with cancer. Obviously, my situation, there were wives of husbands that 5-time, you know, heart surgery patients. There was a mother, a child has cystic fibrosis. None of those were approved. It's devastating. It's devastating. I look at my kids every day and I feel like, you know, I fail them as a mother because I can't protect my children. I can't afford to not have a paycheck. I also called the leaves department to check on my options. Because I had my son this year, I've already used my FMLA for the year, so I don't even have that. If I'm going to take a leave, it has to be personal, and I won't have any insurance.
Hello again, Crystal. I'm sure you've heard that the governor's emergency order was recently extended, but it doesn't sound like it's going to help you much at all. I mean, after all, you said that when you returned in mid-November, for your class of 18 students, 13 were still learning at home. You also mentioned you don't have nearly enough cleaning supplies. And there was an alert about 2 students at your school? I'm sure that did not make the first day back any easier.
They gave me minimal supplies. This is it. This is what you get. A couple of things of Lysol wipes, a thing of gloves, a thing of alcohol wipes, and two small bottles of hand sanitizer. That's it. That's what you get. And I'm supposed to make it work. Make it work for these kids. It's hard. I felt terrified, which I still am. You know, you worry all day long about your students and what's happening, and oh my gosh, did they wash their hands? Do I need to give them another Lysol wipe? They told us that we were going to have these charging ports there. There are no charging ports that have come in as of yet. They were supposed to be in by October the 5th, so they're not there yet. So the students are constantly moving around and changing desks, trying to get near an outlet because their computers aren't lasting all day. It's just one thing after another. So it's terrified, devastated, frustrated, a lot of emotions.
We had it where they said they were going to be very conscious of teachers with family members with severe illnesses. I've got family members with cancer, HIV, waiting for transplants, just got a transplant, and everyone has been denied. So that showed to our members that they don't feel valued or respected, that our teachers are working four times harder. Our security people that are at boots to the ground are working harder. Our cafeteria workers are working harder. Our bus people are working harder. Our custodial staff, they're working harder. They're expected to sanitize and deep clean for the same amount of hours for the same amount of pay. I think that's just wrong. The same thing with our cafeteria workers. You know, you're not just serving food through an assembly line. You're serving that food and then you're packing up the box food to hand out outside in the rain or shine. Those are things that people don't understand that are happening to the rank and file to make this progress happen. That's the piece that's missing. And that's the piece that we have been trying to get to the public. We're not trying to keep schools closed. We want schools open, but in a healthy way.
Anna, you've talked with your superintendent. We have seen you with your school board. They all shrug their shoulders and look to the governor. District safety guidelines call for shutting down if the rate is higher than 5%. Which it has been, other districts, similar actions. Despite disagreements, should decisions on how to best handle the virus in Broward County and the management of schools, especially during a crisis, be decided locally? After all, school boards are locally elected officials.
We have faith, even though we might have disagreements and it looks like that we're bantering and bickering and maybe sometimes confrontational with our district leadership. But at the end of the day, we still know that when it's time to come together, we're gonna come together. So let's do diligence and have the respect of our local control with our school board and our superintendent.
Well, you know, the commissioner and governor say they want to give parents choice. We agree face-to-face learning is better for students, but it works best when the teacher, whether remote or face-to-face in a classroom, works directly with the students. There is so much more to learning than just sitting a child in front of a computer program. Yet, parents here in Broward and in other counties in the state appear to be moving their students out of the district E program to the state's E school, Florida Virtual. And some are calling that a moneymaker for the state after enrollment shot up this year nearly 30%.
That is why parents took to that virtual learning, because they don't want to bring their kids into the physical school site because they do believe that COVID is real. So it's kind of a catch-22 for everybody, that the parents have spoken, you know, we don't want to physically go in the building because, you know, it's not under control. We still want our kids to get educated, but we're seeing that the school systems, the individual school districts are struggling to make the online platform work well because it's not traditionally virtual school. So not being traditionally virtual school, it caused an impact of not being able to have it done with fidelity because they didn't want to put the investment in it. They didn't want to put the resources in it. They didn't want to get the proper training to get it done with fidelity.
Well, at least districts appear to be managing the virus. Crystal, if you're not able to obtain the information you need to feel safe and protect your family, how will you navigate the rest of the school year?
I honestly don't know. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I don't sleep through the night because I'm worried about what's going to happen the next day or what I'm going to do, what's going to happen to my children, what's going to happen to my mother-in-law, what could happen to my husband. We each have our own health issues as well. But again, with my mother-in-law having severe COPD, we didn't think that we needed to apply on behalf of ourselves. Because the district, it was supposed to be yourself or your immediate family member living with you. So we didn't. So I don't know how long I'll be able to continue this way, to be honest with you.
That's a tough position to be in. What a heart-wrenching decision. Look, Kristal really wants to return to her classroom and be with her students, but she believes if she goes back to work, she could seriously jeopardize her family's health. In all, the district has received at least 4,700 applications for accommodations, and it looks like the majority of them might be denied.
Yeah, Tina, there are still so many unknowns. And even with a vaccine on the horizon, the virus is going to be with us for quite some time. Broward educators like Kristal are certainly not alone in this COVID conundrum. There are similar stories in other counties all across the state.
And a few hundred miles north in Alachua County, support staff professionals are recovering from the recent loss of two coworkers in transportation. It's driven one educator to launch a personal assault on the virus. We'll head there in just a moment.
Hi, this is FEA President Andrew Spahr. To stay on top of all the latest news and issues impacting our public schools, be sure to follow FEA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For more information on this podcast, visit feaweb.org/podcast.
Do you want to learn how to build a positive classroom? FEA is hosting a statewide virtual professional learning community focused on building a positive classroom community with effective language. Find out more at feaweb.org/podcast.
Welcome back to Educating from the Heart. I'm Luke Flint, and you're listening to the new FEA member podcast, spotlighting Florida public school educators hard at work.
And I'm Tina Dunbar. We're your hosts. So Luke, what's up next?
Glad you asked, Tina. We're gonna head to Alachua County, where its COVID-19 dashboard shows a total positivity rate that's a little bit low compared to the state average. But still, there have been a couple of hundred of cases reported in their schools, and that's only with half of the students returning to campus since August. There are a lot of concerns about transparency.
I'm just tired. Like, my anxiety level is out the roof, y'all. Today is my birthday, and I'm here because this is important.
You're listening to Tarnisha Phillips, a school bus driver for Alachua County Schools. She is dressed in full protective gear with a mask, gloves, and face shield, presenting her case during a school board's November meeting.
I'm scared.
I know.
My son is at Bethune-Cookman right now, suffering from COVID and pneumonia. My grandkids and their mom and her sister, all in the same house, suffering from COVID positive right now. Like, I am scared. Please, y'all, I have to come to work and face the same fears. We're scared.
I know, ma'am. I'm so
Help
sorry.
Us.
Can you, yes. Thank
Help
you, Ms. Phillips.
Us.
Thank you, Ms.
Help
Phillips.
Us. Please.
Tar Phoenicia has joined our conversation on her cell phone. Welcome to our first episode of Educating from the Heart. This is Tina here with Luke.
Oh, Tar Phoenicia, that was powerful testimony. You've had close and personal contact with the virus. We certainly understand your concern about the district being less than vigilant. Could you explain the problem for bus drivers?
Nobody tells us anything. We have to find out either from the person in transportation that was positive, or, you know, gossip, or, you know, just other people. The news, I found out several cases from me, the news. And I'm like, hey, wait, I transported them to the football game. If the whole JV and varsity and the coaches are out, what about the bus driver that took them to the game? You understand what I'm saying? So it is, I'm always on pins and needles. I'm scared. I'm always stressed out about going to work. And it's never, ever been like this. Because I know that I can't trust them to tell me if I've been in contact with that person. So by word of mouth, you know, around the compound is when you hear about that person and then you be like, oh, wait. And then also sometimes I've had coworkers to come to me and say, hey, look, I put you on my contact trace list. Why are you still here? So when you can't trust, you know, the people that that's supposed to let you know, then it makes me really scared.
You have to admit, that's pretty alarming that you would have to rely on outside sources such as gossip. You're suggesting the district has failed to provide timely notifications on positive cases to the bus drivers. Why do you believe that's true?
Because this is how it's spreading at Lottery County Transportation. We've had two deaths there, very close friends, and it's just scary. It's scary to be a bus driver right now in Alachua County.
So the district does issue notifications to all staff on campus. What would you like to see them do differently?
When they find out about a student or a bus driver on a bus that tested positive, I just think that it would be right that they put an email out for transportation saying that, okay, somebody on your bus tested positive. They don't have to give a name, like they don't give a name at the school when they put out the email for the school, and they let you know, okay, someone in our school tested positive and the last time they were there. But the only time we get emails is if somebody in our department tests positive, and then still the contact tracing is not followed up right.
So you're calling on the district to begin mandatory testing on all drivers every 2 weeks. You want them to follow the guidelines already set in place by the school board for contact tracing. Well, this makes sense considering the infection rate is rising. We all need to do more to protect ourselves, especially in our public schools. Luke, we need to remember school bus drivers are frontline workers. They're the first staff professionals and sometimes the last educators to see a student.
You know, that is so true, Tina. And to talk with us about that a little more, our next guest is Carmen Ward, president of the Alachua County Education Association.
Yes, Carmen, welcome. Now, would you agree the district is not following its own safety protocols? And would you agree that conducting mandatory testing on all school employees would be beneficial?
Hi, Tina. Thank you for the question. Okay, so we have protocols, but the protocols is just like contract language. If it's not enforced, it's meaningless. And so we have a protocol to, if you have three classrooms quarantined, you shut down the school. What I saw happen a couple weeks ago, we had five classes quarantined at one elementary. And when I requested that the superintendent, I urged her to shut down the school, she said she would talk to public health department about it on Monday. And that's not what the protocol, we have a scientific medical advisory council that created the protocol.
And what about testing? I mean, that should be part of the protocol to curb the transmission, right?
We should be able to require testing. It's not a vaccine. It's a test to give more information and to screen during the time of an infectious disease. I believe we should have the power to keep everyone more safe by screening our employees and screening our students. And the school board agrees with me. Probably the governor doesn't, but we have bent over backwards giving parents choices. And in fact, we've been in so flexible that it's like the whole system is collapsing on itself.
I really don't understand the pushback. In order to protect school employees and students and the community, the district needs a plan. The state needs a plan. That's what happened after the Parkland incident. Our districts now have security plans, and our staff and our students, they participate in those plans. Isn't this similar to that situation?
We had to fight really hard to get a mandatory mask policy. It took a lot of negotiating, and we have the city of Gainesville and the Alachua County Commission that enforced a mandatory mask. We were probably one of the first places in the state that said, all businesses, you wear a mask. And the school board said, we're an island. We don't really have to follow the county order. And we really disputed that. And we got the mandatory mask on buses everywhere. Most people comply.
Would you agree, Carmen, that outside intervention from Tallahassee has influenced decisions made in Alachua? I mean, if your school board were left to make their own decisions, things would probably look different, wouldn't they?
I do believe that we would have followed science in Alachua County. I have faith in our school board members that they would make the safest decision. And I think going forward, we are going to see mandatory testing come to Alachua County.
Well, that's what Tarfanisha and other educators have been requesting. Carmen, what impact has the virus and the way it's been handled in the district had on staff?
That we've lost many, many employees to this pandemic because they have chosen their own safety over their jobs. And we've lost many educators, from teachers to support staff to bus drivers. Many people have stepped away from their career. So we have overcrowded classrooms. We have teachers that would have normally 22 to 24 students in their class that now have 45 students. They will have 20 in their classroom and 25 simultaneously in a high flex model, where there's digital students and brick and mortar students being taught simultaneously. And there's no way to give the proper amount of attention to students.
Yeah, you know, teacher and staff shortages have been a huge problem for quite a while. I don't know that the public understands just how severe the problem is, and COVID is not helping. There has been a lot of talk about teacher shortages, but not as much about the loss of support professionals. How is this situation impacting the support staff?
Well, we definitely need acknowledgement that there is a bus driver shortage. We need to have the numbers in place that we can reduce the capacity on all our buses.
By us being short already of bus drivers, a lot of my coworkers are like pitching in to help. So therefore their buses are being overcrowded, and with them saying 38 kids to a bus already is way too much. And it really makes the kids have to sit at least two to a seat. I've heard some come over and say they've had over 38 and there's nothing that, you know, they do about it. They just tell them, go ahead and take them home. So they're not following the actual guidelines that they gave us with the 38 kids. The brick and mortar is bringing back way more kids, and it's getting real stressful about having to put more than 38 kids on the bus. That's a problem.
So Tarfanisha, you transport all levels of students from the youngest to the oldest. And to keep your students safe, I hear that you prefer to clean your bus on your own and you don't want anyone else to step inside of it.
Unfortunately, the young man, the older guy that was cleaning my bus, he passed away of COVID a few weeks ago, and he cleaned my bus. And he always told me, he said, I would get on your bus, he said, because you have the best air conditioning, and I'll crank your bus up and just sit back in your seat and cool off before I move on. And so when he tested positive, I was like, oh my gosh, wait a minute. Now I'm really, you know, I'm really scared because, okay, he used my air conditioning, you know. So I went to them and I let them know, look, I didn't want nobody cleaning my bus. I clean my own bus. You don't have to pay me. I don't care. Like, only people I want on my bus is the mechanic if you have to, me and my kids. That's it. So I clean my bus after each run, but, you know, everybody is not me. So, no, it's not. Yeah, that's all they give us is that 256 spray. They do provide us with shields, masks, jackets, and gloves, but you know, everybody don't feel the same way about COVID. I try to make time if I have to pull over somewhere, and after I drop off elementary, spray the bus down. I just need this bus to be sprayed down like right now before I go and pick up my high school, because I don't think it's fair for middle school to have to sit on elementary school and high school stuff, and then middle school is the last school we pick, then we clean the bus.
If you see Tarfanisha at work, she is fully garbed up from head to toe, ready to fight the COVID.
Well, I've seen Tarfanisha's outfit. I really impress. Luke, you should see a picture of it. I found one in the newspaper when she spoke at the school board meeting. It is very secure, head to toe protection. But Tarfanisha, how do the students respond when they see you?
I will, because she's absolutely correct. And the kids think that it's so funny. They are so glad that they have that type of bus driver. They're so glad though, but yeah, I am. I go in the office that way and I walk around the compound that way. I get on my bus with my gear on, because if I'm ever tested, at least I wouldn't have been on my bus breathing and then picking up my kids. So I enter my bus with all my gear on and I keep it on until I get back to my car and put everything in the trunk where I spray it down. So yeah, I'm I don't know what to call me.
As we heard, Tina, Tarfanisha is familiar with a lot of people who have the virus, including some family members, and there have been some tragic consequences for her loved ones.
Wow, that's really incredible. That many contacts, it's unbelievable.
It really is. And she simply believes that we collectively are not serious about the virus. And I think that's why it's so important for her to share her experiences with the students on the bus. She wants to be sure that her kids understand how real the virus is and contagious, and it could be dangerous even for young folk like them.
Yes, so true. And what a powerful and important message for our students coming from one of our education staff professionals. Luke, most people don't realize the positive impacts that school support staff can have on student behavior and performance. Often, they are the educators who are able to provide the extra time and attention that many teachers don't have because they're juggling so many students in one classroom.
That is so true about how vitally important they are. You know, this has been a wonderful opportunity to talk with teachers and support staff who work in our public schools and who are members of the FEA. We know that all educators are working extra hard right now, and we appreciate everything that you do. And we hope that you have enjoyed this inaugural episode of Educating from the Heart, and we hope you'll join us next month. Speaking of, what's up for next month, Tina?
Well, Luke, it's December, the end of the calendar year. What do you always do at the end of the year? I know. Let's do a 2020 review.
A 2020 review? Why would anybody want to look back on 2020? It's been such a bad year.
Yeah, it's been kind of awful, yucky, if you ask me. But there were some good things that happened for educators. And we'd like for our listeners to join us as we recognize those positive moments. So please take a moment and visit www.feaweb.org/podcast to subscribe.
And we would really like to hear from all of you. Please email your feedback, ideas, suggestions for future shows to heart@floridaea.org. Again, the email address is heart@floridaea.org. If you prefer, you could call and leave us a message at 850-201-3384. We hope to hear from you.
And thanks to our guests and our listeners. Until you tune in again, keep educating from the heart.
FEA's Safe Schools Report is an effort to collect and display important factual information about the safety of Florida's public schools during the coronavirus pandemic. Read the report, which is updated weekly, by visiting feaweb.org/safeschoolsreport.
Educating from the Heart is a production of the Florida Education Association. FEA is the statewide educators union with more than 150,000 members, including teachers, education staff professionals, higher education faculty, graduate assistants, students preparing to become teachers, and retired educators.